Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, welcome to the Snooker Scene podcast. I'm Dave Hendon. That noise you could hear in the background is Leicester. That's where I am this week, of course, with the British Open. And by the time you hear this, the first day's play will be done. So you're sort of listening, I guess, in the future. You will know who's done what the results are from day one. Let's hope it was a good day. Let's start on a positive note for a change. Dave Gilbert, fantastic performance by him to win the Championship League. A trophy at long last for him. It's been coming and coming, but you know, you're never quite sure when players knock on the door if it's ever going to open for him. Well, it has done, and he played well. That tournament, I don't care what anyone says about that tournament, it's hard to win because the matches are short, and also being a league format, of course, you know, you are sometimes depending on other results. But Dave played 10 matches over the course of the event, and he won 9 of them, and he played really well. Mark Allen seemed to be playing the best snooker of the last day, but Dave beat him in the final. The Championship League carries ranking points, and so he's a ranking event winner, and every credit to him. I don't know how he views it compared to the tournaments where he lost in the finals, because of course they were, a lot of them were big money knockout events. But if you follow Dave on social media, you'll have observed that he's very happy with his trophy, as he should be. You know, he's one of those players who everyone kind of likes. He's very down to earth, self-deprecating, sometimes I think in a sort of quite over the top way compared to his ability, which is huge. Very nice player to watch. He was on Talking Snooker podcast a couple of weeks ago now, and they did a great interview with him, which is absolutely the essence of who Dave is as a person. You know, there's no BS with Dave. He's very much just tells it as he sees it. And it's one of the nice things about snooker. We've said this before on the podcast, that the players are very relatable. And, you know, he's had a proper job. He was a farmer working for his dad's forestry business. And he appreciates very much the opportunities that he has right now in the game and the living he's able to make from it. And that's the thing about this. So he's earned $33,000 for winning the tournament. But in reality, it's going to be worth a lot more. He's in the Champion of Champions, he'll be in the World Grand Prix, good chance to get in the Players' Championship, and being in those events, possibly the Tour Championship. In terms of his world ranking, he's gone up 4 places to 19. So if he continues on that trajectory, that's not an easy word to say, he'll get in the Masters, possibly the Crucible. So suddenly, something that's worth, on paper, 33,000, in reality at least 50, could be worth at least 100 grand to him. And this could revitalise, you know, his whole career. Didn't enjoy last year in the lockdown. But the main thing is he got a trophy. And that's, you know, that's what he's taken away from that event, the knowledge that he can win tournaments. And it'd be interesting to see. Remember Ryan Day, he had that tag, best player not to win a ranking event. He won one, and then pretty soon after, he won another one, and he's since won a third. So, you know, let's see if Dave can do the same tough match against Matthew Stevens, first round of the British Open. The mantle, I guess, passes now. Not a mantle necessarily you want, although it's a compliment of sorts. Best player not to win a ranked event to Jack Nowczowski. Jack didn't enter the Championship League. I've no idea why. I'm not sure he's really in sort of the status of player who can afford to skip events, but he did, and that's obviously his free choice. Be interesting to see how his season pans out, because if he misses out on the top 16 by, you know, a couple of thousand, he might look back and think, I should have played in that. But anyway, we'll follow his progress with interest. I do think Jack will win something, but we'll see. We'll see when it is. So congratulations to Dave. Championship League, I think, was the ideal event to start the season with, because it was sort of low-key. But for the players, one thing that I think really was an advantage was you were guaranteed 3 matches. So you didn't just turn up, play a match, and, you know, if you lose, you go home. They were guaranteed 3 matches a day, getting back into it after all, you know, the sort of summer break. But remember, a lot of these players hadn't played since April, since the World Qualifying. It's quite a long time. And, you know, the standard was variable. There was some really good snooker played. Some players struggled, but I think it was a good way to ease back into the season. 21 days on Free Sports as well. The snooker that they show is the highest rating sport that they show all year, and that includes Spanish football and all sorts of other things. So they're delighted with snooker. And away from the sort of Twitter-arty knocking it, actually, the general public who just turn on the telly and watch snooker without going online to moan about everything, loved it. So good luck to them. I'm sure we'll see plenty more snooker on Free Sports. The Championship League, the invitation version is planned for next year, so I'm sure that will come round, and I'm looking forward to it. And I'm going to stay positive, actually, because in a departure for me, because I want to mention, again, Phil Hagan, the Metro, has done an interview with Jason Ferguson, and I was sort of complaining last week. Remember I mentioned Jamie O'Neill's suspension that was dressed up as a withdrawal, and I kind of said, you know, that they should have been, World Snooker Tour should have been more, well, honest about what had happened. To be fair to Jason, he addressed it directly in that interview, and a lot of other things as well. And this is what we need. We just need accountability. And Jason was a player, but if he's been on this podcast, if you've heard him, you know that he can talk very, very well and represent the sport very, very well. And a range of issues were discussed. So I recommend checking that out on the Metro Online, because he answers a lot of points. And one of them is about the Turkish Masters. Now, last week it was announced that this new ranking event is going to be postponed until later in the season. I think people saw it coming with the travel restrictions around COVID. It always sort of seemed unlikely it would take place in September. It's now been scheduled for March. We'll see. Hopefully we'll be able to go there then, to Antalya. But originally, so July the 11th, it was the day of the Euro football final. So a lot of people's, certainly in England, attention was caught on that. But World Snooker Tour put a story up essentially listing the prize fund for Turkey, which is substantial, 100 grand first prize. But they also said in that that they were planning to, if the Turkish event could not happen, they were planning to run an event in Barnsley instead. So the players, I guess, had that security that, OK, if we can't go to Turkey, we'll have a direct replacement event in Barnsley. This is what they said. So this Rolf Kaal made a note of this at the time, and he kept this screenshot, which I'm now going to read. He said, "If for any reason we're not able to host the tournament on these dates, we intend to postpone the event to dates to be confirmed later this season, likely to be March. In this instance, we plan to stage a different ranking event in Barnsley from September the 27th to October the 3rd. But last week, when the tournament was postponed, there was no mention of this direct replacement event, even though players had it on their calendars and it had been, as I say, it had been announced. And I thought that was a bit odd, so I sort of contacted them and said, oh yeah, we don't feel it's commercially viable. Now, that's fine. They're a commercial company, you know, they don't want to lose a fortune. But I think they owe it to the players to tell them that. It's the same thing as I've been saying about the British Open format, Jamie O'Neill, and now this. Just communicate with people. So this is why I was pleased to see Jason. He did address this. He actually explained, yeah, we at this stage, we don't feel it's the right thing to do. No problem with that at all. But tell people. All this sort of secrecy is no good at all. I've been working with Matrim for the last 4 weeks on the Championship League. They are the opposite. They'll tell you things if you ask them directly. They don't try and cover things up. And I think that's the best way to be. I'm not saying everything should be revealed to people, but what annoyed me was, when that story went up and the press release went out, I went back. A player said to me, oh, there's going to be a tournament in Barnes, isn't there? And I said, oh, yeah, they did announce that. I'll show you the original story. And on the original story, it's been edited. The website's been edited, and that line has been deleted. That line about Barnes has been deleted. And I find that, frankly, a bit sinister. Just, it's almost like, oh, no, it never happened. You know, that's no good, is it? You know, come on, guys. Anyway, positivity is what is our watchword this week. So I'm going to move on. It's going to be a short podcast because, you know, we're knee-deep in the British Open. But we had a question here. Anthony Fitzpatrick, thanks for your question. He says, love the podcast. My question this week is, as the new season kicks off with the British Open, what players outside the top 16 would you like to see do well this season? Well, you know, I obviously have to be... Thanks, Anthony, for the question. I obviously have to be impartial, which I am. When I commentate on snooker, I genuinely don't care who wins and loses, because I'm just focusing on my own performance rather than cheering anybody on. That's not what it's about. However, there are players I'd like to see do well. I'm going to name three, and they're all sort of different kind of stages, I suppose, of their career. The first, we need young players to do well. Clearly, we need new faces, new talent coming through. One player I'd like to see do well is Jackson Page from Wales. He dropped off the tour at the end of last season, got on again through Q School immediately, which is tough. I was talking to Mark Williams about this at the Championship League, because he's a mentor to Jackson, and he said, you know, he himself was a bit concerned for him going to Q School. If he did not got through, you know, it would have been a massive knock to sort of take a year off the circuit. But he got back on, and that's great, and he may well flourish now. We've seen this before, people like Sean Murphy, Neil Robertson, Karen Wilson, who are now all big hitters. They all dropped off the tour initially after turning pro and had to, in some cases, take a couple of years to get back on. Now, Jackson's got back on immediately, but it may be that, you know, he's still only young. He's only, what, 20? So it may be that it's kind of, I'm not going to say done him a favour, but he may see things differently and be a bit more determined now. He's learnt sort of the ropes a little bit being on the tour, had some good results, taken a few knocks as well. But it may be that coming back on, he now will solidify his position. I hope so. I'd love to see someone like that do well. Obviously, he's from a very strong area for snooker in Wales. They need new faces. They can't rely on Mark and Matthew Ryan Day forever. So, yeah, I'd like to see him do well. Absolutely. At the other end of the scale, Ken Doherty. Now, Ken, obviously, you know, he's had a great career, and, you know, if he never wins another match, he will still have had a great career. But the thing about Ken is he's just oozes class in everything he does. As a player, engaging with fans, as a media pundit, he can do anything. You know, at the Championship League, he was studio pundit, he was a commentator, he did an interview with Mark Allen at the end. He could do it all. And for what he's contributed to the sport, for what he's given to the sport, I know he still considers himself first and foremost as a player, which I think is great after all these years. We were chatting last night, we went for a meal with the ITV guys, and, you know, on the way back, he was just talking about the old Pro-Am days, the excitement that he had in those days, and it's never left him. And you've got to respect that. And anyone who has been so positive about the sport and contributed to the sport as much as him, of course you want to see him do well. So I'd love to see Ken get a few results. At his age, I mean, he's in his early 50s now, it's unlikely to be returned to the top 16 or anything like that, but wouldn't it be great if he had a real run in a tournament or got to the Crucible again or something like that? I know what that would mean to him. So definitely Ken as well. And the third player I'm going to mention is my new commentary buddy, Stephen Haworth. Now, Stephen, at the Championship League, and I think this worked really well, players were asked by Matchroom, would you like to do some commentary? And a lot of them put their names forward. There weren't enough slots for everyone, but a sort of list was chosen. And Stephen was on that list, and he came and did a day and was brilliant. Really interesting. He said, you know, he's really interested in the media, and it's clear that he thought about how he was going to do it and sort of studied maybe how other people had done it and thought, okay, this is how I'm going to approach it. And what I liked about it was, obviously, you know, like any player, he understands the game, but he approached it from his position in the game, which is as a relatively young professional, really still starting out, finding their way, and saying that he wanted to learn from watching the other players and wanted to kind of, you know, look at the way certainly top players approach things and try and incorporate that into his game. Bit of a thinker. I think he's also got an interesting story. He plays on an RAF base. That's where he practices because his dad was in the military. We must mention the Plough, the pub he works in as well, in Lincolnshire, because that's a big snooker pub, apparently. Snooker's always on the TV there. And just a nice guy, very interesting guy. And what happened was, because he impressed the Matchroom and us all so much, he came back to do several more days. He was in Vision, in the arena as well, doing punditry towards the end. Just a nice guy, and you want to see, again, people like that doing well. You know, he's got a good, positive outlook on snooker. And yeah, I was on board very much with him as a commentator. And again, he wants to concentrate on playing. So as I record this, he's actually playing now in the British Open. So I don't know how that's going to go for him. But yeah, I'd like to see him do well. Now, this doesn't mean, of course, I'm going to cheer against any of their opponents. It doesn't work like that. But yeah, I'd like to see those three do well. Jackson Page, Ken Doherty and Stephen Haworth. And you know, I will follow their progress with great interest. We've had an email from Aidan Dullahairy, whose name I've almost certainly pronounced incorrectly. But thank you, Aidan, for getting in contact. He says, I realised earlier this year during lockdown that despite listening to many sports podcasts, I wasn't listening to a dedicated snooker one at all. I started watching snooker in 1997 when I was 10. I watched a lot of it over the years, but for some reason I watched a bit less in the middle part of the last decade. I really got back into it in 2019. Just jump it in. This seems to be a common thing, actually. I mean, Dave Tindall, our regular correspondent, kind of went away from snooker. A lot of people come back to it recently. I think it's worth thinking about that, actually. And I'll get on with Aidan's email in a minute. But I do think possibly just the more free-to-air coverage has made a difference. Like ITV, definitely, and Quest, and Free Sports, I've mentioned, BBC, of course. It seems to be more accessible now, snooker. Obviously, Eurosport as well, for people who have that. There's great chances to watch the snooker now, and maybe this is how people have got back into it, stumbled across it, and, you know, rekindled their love for it. Anyway, he says, I really got back into it in 2019 or so and went to my first live tournament in January 2020, the Masters at Alexandra Palace. Not being UK-based didn't help at all. I was at the venue for the other major sport on there over Christmas, so I knew I'd love it there. He's talking about darts, of course. It was amazing. I really loved it. Won't ever forget it. Then I saw Steve Davis and Dennis Taylor 10 days or so after that at an exhibition in Cork here in Ireland, where I'm from. It was the last majority thing I went to before lockdown one. Snooker was amongst the first sports to return behind closed doors after the first wave of lockdown, and boy, was I glad to see it. As I say, it was only this year that I noticed that I'd not been listening to any snooker podcasts. So I happened to stumble across your podcast on my podcast app. It is one of the very few available on my app of choice. I'm so delighted that I did stumble across it. What you do is so interesting and informative from what I gather with very little money. Well, you got that right, Aidan. You can tell from the production. He says, you really get the balance right between looking at the past and the current season's news and reactions to what's just happened. I have a ticket bought to go to the World Championship next April. It's been a huge ambition of mine to get to the Crucible. I can't wait to see it. It's definitely a major bucket list item of mine ticked. Hopefully it'll work out and COVID won't cause any more restrictions next year or no more problematic variants emerge. I like your motto of wanting to grow the game. That one extra thing I'd like to see you talk about is the women's game and trying to promote the growth of that. I don't expect you'll talk about it every episode by any means, but it would be good to do so around times their tournaments are on, with contributions from others if possible, as I'm aware they have a less packed calendar. Is this something you consider doing on occasion? Also, given the week we're in, I still don't get why snooker and Q sports generally are not in the Olympics, given some of the things that are. Like skateboarding, nothing against that being there as such, but don't understand why snooker isn't also there. Doesn't look like they will be there soon either, even with the push they made for 2024. Maybe this is something you want to discuss for even half an episode. Well, anyway, he carries on a little bit, but thank you very much for the kind comments. On the Olympics, I mean, this is kind of an ongoing issue. You're right, they went and did a presentation in Paris. I think Sean Murphy went, and all the Q sports went together. So you got snooker, pool, carom billiards, English billiards, all the different sort of, well, not all of them, but most of the major Q sports. I think it was unlikely for Paris. Snooker is not a French sport, really. I think it was unlikely to get in. Where are we after that? Los Angeles, I think it's very unlikely. Brisbane, well, not impossible, but again, unlikely. I think snooker does suffer from not being an athletic sport. Some of the new sports you mentioned, skateboarding, for example, BMX and all that, obviously is aimed at youth market, and they always say at the end of the Olympics, you know, the youth of the world will gather at the next one. It's always about kind of, you know, young people getting into sport. So I think snooker is at a disadvantage. A lot of people say, well, why do we need to be it anyway? Well, what it would give is a huge international profile to snooker. And as Igor Figueiredo said, I think I mentioned this the other week, it would be an access to funding for players from various countries that don't get any. So I think it would be a positive thing. I can't see it happening in the next decade, frankly. I just can't see it happening. I think chances were missed by previous administrations, certainly around Beijing. I mean, when China was at the height of the snooker boom, 15 years ago, that was a chance there. London 2012, actually a possible chance there, but anyway, it didn't happen. I think they introduced a new sailing class or something, which maybe says something about the sort of British sport and class and all the rest of it. But anyway, I can't see it happening in the immediate future, but let's see where we are in a few years' time. On your point about women's snooker, well, of course, there haven't been any events. They've just had one recently, actually, so the women's game is coming back. And we should congratulate women's snooker on their 40th anniversary at the end of July. It's 40 years since women's snooker was founded. Mandy Fisher was a huge driving force behind that and has been in the four decades since. She's now president. So, yeah, I'm sure we can address women's snooker in the future and hopefully speak to Rhiann at some point as well. Of course, she's now on the tour as well, and trying to make that crossover to the professional game, not easy. A lot of attention on her, particularly obviously on her first match in the British Open. So yeah, I'm sure we'll catch up with all of that. And of course, it's good to see the women's game coming back round, the amateur game as well starting up again. It's a sign that hopefully we're starting to kind of move on a little bit and get back to playing. So the season is underway. It kind of doesn't come to a grinding halt, but in terms of tournaments, of course, because of the Turkish move and no replacement event after the British Open, there won't actually be a tournament until October, the Northern Ireland Open. It's very difficult, obviously, at the moment, planning-wise. It's hard to get venues at the last minute. So, you know, it's understandable, but it's a little bit of a full start. We've had two ranking events, and then we'll have no more until October. But then, of course, it does really ramp up, and there'll be a lot of snooker to be played. Before then, though, and it's been a short podcast this week, before then, I am taking a little holiday, so I won't be with you for a while. Try and cope, everybody. But there'll be qualifying action to watch, and obviously, you know, things will happen off table, I'm sure. You can email us, though, snookerscenepodcast@mail.com. That's snookerscenepodcast@mail.com. Hope everybody enjoys the British Open, and we'll see how it goes. I think one thing Jason Ferguson said in that article that I certainly agreed with is that the test of any new format, and he admitted he wasn't necessarily a fan of the best of fives, having been a player himself, but the test of any format really is the public reaction to it. Not beforehand, but during the event and afterwards. And, you know, if viewing figures are good, if live audiences are good, then I guess it will be judged a success. And, you know, that ultimately, for a commercial operation, which professional snooker is, that ultimately is the goal. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. I hope it's a good week. I hope everyone enjoys it. I'll be back at some point, I hope. But until then, stay safe and keep watching the skies, whatever that means.
Sports Social Podcast Network.